Hello and welcome to today's episode of TSARP. I'm your host, Andrew Weir, and today our co-host is Steven.
Hello, guys.
All right, today we got a very exciting guest. He's the CEO and founder of Flipstick. He's been on Shark Tank. He's a motivational speaker. It's Akeem Shannon.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
All right,
Thanks for having me today.
Yeah, very excited to have you on. You've done a ton of awesome things, so I can't wait to get into it. But first, in the email you had sent me over, you had talked about how in high school you were in a coding competition, and that relates to us a lot, you know, because as you might know, you know, we every year we're in a big coding competition, and we love it. So you want to talk a little about that?
Yeah, man. You know, one, let me just say, like, Andrew, Steven, I love what you guys are doing. Sometimes I wish that I had known a little bit more about life when I was your age than I did. And I found out about it a little bit later, but I just think what you're doing is extraordinary. You know, creating a community of people who have like-minded interests and honestly just pursuing your dreams. Of course, I saw the amazing video of you at NASDAQ, you know, with the bell. And I just, you know, it really kind of just had me inspired. So I love what you guys are doing. And, you know, maybe someone will hear my story and they're on the fence about, you know, kind of taking that next step of their dreams and their passions. And they'll go ahead and just take the step and go for it. So, yeah, I mean, you know, I remember I was in high school. I was probably a freshman or sophomore in high school. And I get told about this organization called BDPA, which is the Black Data Processors Association. And so they had this high school computer competition that they did every year where they would invite high schoolers from all over the country to come and code a website with the data, with a SQL database and user logins and admin permissions and all this stuff. And you had 8 hours and you could only use Notepad. Okay, like, and that was it. Notepad and paint. It was an absolute, like, grueling competition. You know, you couldn't use any of the assistive softwares. But it was one of those things where my parents were like, hey, you know, this will be great. You can get some scholarship money. Like, why don't you just go and do it? And so I signed up. One of my buddies was signed up for it. And I started to go. And if I'm being honest, the reason I joined, it was sponsored by a company in town called Monsanto. But for those who may not know, Monsanto makes a product called Roundup. And Roundup's a weed killer, but it's also used in pretty much every commercial grade, like corn and soybean seed around the world. So a massive multi-billion dollar company recently bought by Bayer, who makes aspirin and other things. And so since I was going to be able to go to like the headquarters of Monsanto, now Bayer, and meet all of these like amazing, you know, professionals and they had pizza every week for us. I said, well, you know, pizza every week sounds pretty good. So I signed up to be in this competition. Now, the first year we went, we were absolute stinkers. Like, I think we got second to last place out of 50 teams. Every state had a team. And we were horrible. Like, it was absolutely atrocious. And honestly, I wanted to quit. But, you know, the person who was running the team, they're like, look, if we quit, you know, Monsanto is not going to sponsor the team after next year if we don't perform well, because it's not a cheap program for them to sponsor. And if we're just going to suck it up, this is going to end and no one else is going to have this opportunity after you guys. I was like, well, let's give it one more try. And so that year we got some more people on the team. We had this one young lady, Sue, and Sue was like, she was just so into coding. And I was never to coding. I was honestly there for the free pizza and the free trip to, I think that year is going to be Philadelphia. I'm like, yeah, I'll get to go to Philly for free. Like, it'll be great. But her and her sister, who were twins, they were just really into it. And I said, you know what? I think we could actually make this happen this year. And as we got to the competition, I was never a really strong coder. I knew a little bit. You know, I learned the modules. I did the homework. But I wasn't fast. I would make mistakes. You know, it just wasn't my thing. But what I was always really good at was I loved figuring out, okay, we only have 8 hours in this competition. How can I make a logo for our website in paint? How can I create buttons that look cooler than the default buttons we can code, which is CSS and HTML, like in paint? Like, how can I do all these things and do them so quickly that it won't like affect us doing this coding project? And we only had one computer, 5 people on the team, but one computer to use. And so I got really good. Like, I would practice, like, okay, how quickly can I do these designs? But more importantly than the graphic design, which I enjoyed, was at the end of this coding competition, we had to present our final project to a panel of judges. And we had to show them and walk them through our code, show them what we had done. The project was designed so that you couldn't really complete every item on the list in time. So we had to really show them, like, hey, given the time crunch that we had, here was the decisions that we made. Here are the cuts that we made. And this is why we chose and made the decisions that we did in the project. And so I was given the role of being the team leader. The worst coder was the team leader. And I was the one who assigned everyone a role during our presentation, told everybody what it is that they were going to say to the judges, why we made certain decisions and certain calculations in the project. And I'll be honest, you know, there were some teams that got like 95% of the way done. Okay. And we were like 60%, 65%, you know, if I'm being generous. But our presentation was so good. There was this one part where we were like, so we were supposed to have a graphic user interface for like for the administrator to go in and make changes to the web app. And we didn't do any of the admin side, like none of it. They didn't have logins, anything. And so I went into the competition and I said, what we realized is that having an admin like GUI function of this website is totally impractical and not a good use of our resources. Because if you're an admin on the website, you can easily go into the database and make all the necessary changes you need to the website on the back end. And you do not need a front end user interface for admins to be able to go and have access to it. Mm. So we totally just removed that from the project. And honestly, we didn't think it should be within the scope of the project. And they were like, you know what? That makes a lot of sense. I said, oh, thank goodness, because that was like 50% of the grade.
Yeah.
So we end up getting 5th place. We went from like 45th, 46th place to 5th place. And 5th place was the cutoff where you got scholarships. So it was a top 5 competition. And when I tell you, our sponsors were so excited because the team had never placed like in the top 20 in the entire time that they had sponsored the team. And now we had a 5th place finish. And this was, I want to say this was actually the year I graduated when we had the 5th place finish, because that was my last year on the team. And then the next year they went back and they sponsored them again. And the next year they got 3rd place in this national competition. And it was just one of those things for me where I was like, man, you know, I wasn't the best. I was probably the worst. But there was something that I was good at, and my teammates trusted me enough that even though I wasn't the best coder, they knew that I knew how to talk to people. And that whatever I was going to tell them they should talk about in the presentation about what we had gotten done and completed, they trusted me enough to do that, and I trusted myself enough to do that. And it ended up working out. And lo and behold, years later, you know, I would still be that person that, you know, I never knew everything, but I knew enough to talk about it. And so whether that was being on Shark Tank or convincing Snoop Dogg to invest in my products or getting into Target retail stores or getting my story told in the Smithsonian Museum, all of those things was all about my ability to tell great stories and to get people on board with what it is that I believed in, so that they would stand behind me. And at the time, I didn't know that's what I was doing. But as I looked back on it, after, you know, I found a little bit of success, you know, it showed me like, wow, you know, there's a place for everybody within every group or organization or team. And it's really all about finding what it is that makes people tick and what interest level you have in certain things. And once you find that, man, you know, the sky is the limit. And that high school competition was just the beginning, because it would get a lot more fun from there.
Wow. Well, that's a fantastic story, and I really relate to it, because we say a lot for the competition we compete in. A lot of people in our school, right, when we're like having tryouts for the team, they're like, yeah, but I'm not a great coder. I'm not going to try out. But what we say is we normally every year we have a spot dedicated just for someone who is awesome at art. So it's awesome to see that, like, that's really where you came from, and with paint, you know, we have other programs, but you were doing it in paint. And it's awesome that, you know, our competition is a lot like what you were doing too. So that's awesome to see. So obviously, yeah, that was kind of like your start. You found what you liked there. Where did you go from that? Because obviously you've done a lot of awesome things since then, like being on Shark Tank, you know, pitching your idea to Snoop Dogg, like you were saying. Like, what was the next big step?
Yeah, so honestly, the next big step for me was a step backwards. So when I graduated high school, I go off to college. I had a full scholarship to study chemical engineering. And, you know, I really shouldn't have been in chemical engineering because I hated chemistry. But Forbes magazine said the chemical engineers, one of the top paying career paths, so pick it now. And so I chose chemical engineering. Within three semesters, I lose my scholarship. I'm on academic probation. And I was just severely depressed. I went back up to school knowing that I had been kicked out, squatted in the dorm. I mean, it was really like one of the most depressive states of my entire life. And I had to eventually call my parents and say, hey, you know, I failed. Like, you know, I messed up. And not only did I mess up, when I screwed up, I didn't even ask you for help. And now I have to come home and I have to start over and figure something else out. And I just felt so ashamed that I had squandered, you know, this amazing opportunity. And now I was going to have to go get a job, you know, working at a retail store. And so I come back home. I don't tell any of my friends from high school because some of them went to great schools and I don't want anyone to know that, you know, I'm this failure. And I start working in a Sprint store, which is now T-Mobile stores. And I start selling cell phones. And I knew, like, I'd always loved iPhones and always loved Galaxy phones. And I'm like, you know, it'd be great to be able to work and sell these products. And so I get pretty good at selling this stuff. And eventually I have a boss of mine, a former boss of mine, who went to go work for Verizon in a call center. He's like, hey, you know, you can make a ton of money working here at Verizon. Like, these people don't know how to sell anything. And you're one of the greatest salesmen I've ever met. If you come here, you'll make three times what you're making at Sprint. And at the time, I was making 10 bucks an hour, right? 10 bucks an hour plus commission. He's telling me I can make three times as much. So I quit my job. I go work for Verizon. And over the course of the next 4 years, right, post getting kicked out of school, I saved up nearly $100,000. And by the time my friends were graduating college, I was making nearly $90,000 a year. Wow. And I had made myself this promise that, man, you know, if I can't have a degree, I could at least make as much money as the average person graduating with a degree. And once I was able to accomplish that, even though that, you know, from starting at 10 bucks an hour, that was quite a feat. But once I was able to accomplish that, it showed me like, wow, you know, just because you fail, it doesn't make you a failure. Because as long as when you fail, you don't give up, you find the opportunities to level up. And it showed me like, you know, I think a lot of times when we're in school, there is no redemption for failure. You know, like if you fail on a test, your teacher doesn't say, hey, well, at least you learned a lot. No, it's like you failed. If you flunk the class, you flunk.
Yeah.
There is no redeeming factors there. But in life, failure is always an opportunity to learn. And it's the best teacher you could ever have. And if you're not failing at something in life, you're really not living. Because you're not pushing yourself to the edge of your boundaries and the edge of the possibilities that you can create. And so learning this lesson about really drastic failure and being able to overcome and come back from it, it truly set me up for the future where I would fail a lot, but I was no longer afraid to fail. I was no longer ashamed of failing because I realized that sometimes we face these storms in our lives. We face these problems and we think the problems are putting us off track on our lives. We think that it's setting us back and preventing us from achieving what it is that we're supposed to do. But actually what it is it's actually knocking us back on course. It's actually knocking us back onto the direction that we were supposed to head. And you see this in so many people's lives. I remember I was reading about, this is years ago, reading about the biography of Steve Jobs and about how at Apple, when they decided they were going to fire him because Apple wasn't performing well, you know, they didn't really have any killer products. Microsoft was wiping the floor with them and they just said, you're no good. He's like, but guys, I created the graphical user interface. Like, you know, we're creating computers not for businesses, but for people. Like, you know, we have one of the most popular Super Bowl ads of all time in 1984. Like, we are on to something here, and you're going to fire me? And they're like, yeah, we're going to fire you. Get out. And just to go and show those people, the board of directors, like, guys, you don't know what you're talking about. Steve goes, he says, you know what I really like? I think that animated movies could be better. And I think I'm the guy to do it. God knows nothing about animated movies, okay? But he thinks he's the guy to do it. He said, look, I invented the personal computer. I can go do this. So he goes, he creates a little company called Pixar. And he releases Toy Story. And it becomes the biggest commercial success of any animated movie in the history of animated movies. And they end up merging this thing with Disney for billions of dollars. And then Apple's looking, and the board of directors is like, wait a minute. Isn't that the guy we fired? How did he become the king of animated movies 2 years after we fired him from this company? And they realized, like, oh, we thought that we were locking him up and telling him he was a failure. What we didn't see was that he's bigger than Apple. And what did they do? They said, Steve, can you please come back? We need your help. It was so funny recently when the founder of OpenAI faced the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Here they were. The board of directors is like, this guy, he doesn't know what he's doing. He's missing everything that we're trying to do here. We're smarter than him. We're better than him. You know, Sam, he's just off track. Get rid of him. And what happens? Microsoft says, no, we invested in this company. And we know Sam Altman's got what it takes. You're not firing Sam. And if you do, don't worry. We'll build the whole company back up from scratch again, and we'll pay for all of it. And you won't have a single person that works here. And once again, you saw a group of people that thought that they could deem failure on somebody else, someone who's trying to do something that has a vision much bigger than that they could ever see. And it just goes to show you, like, those circumstances that happen to people, you know, especially leaders and titans of industry, like, they always direct and guide them, and really, like, they ensure their resolve to pursue the highest version of themselves and ultimately the highest version of their companies and their mission. And, you know, knowing those stories, man, it for me, it just makes me inspired on my tiny little level, you know, to go and pursue these things.
Yeah, I remember that was just a few months ago with Sam Altman, and that was a big topic here on TSAR. We talked about it a lot. Every time there was a change, it was like every day there was
a new update. It was every day.
Yeah.
Unfortunately for Steve Jobs, his took a few years. But
yeah,
I mean, you know, and that's like, I'm sure at that time for Sam, like, it was just devastating to have such a betrayal happen to you. But man, it's gonna make him a better executive, and it's gonna ensure the long term strength of the company.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the perfect example of, you know, or your story really, of getting back up, you know, from a failure, you know, but not becoming yourself a failure, and then going on and doing bigger and better things. So after that, right, you know, you become the biggest salesman at Verizon, right? After that, where did you get the idea for Flipstick?
Yeah, so, you know, I left Verizon. I ended up working at Square, or now Block, Inc., and I was a top salesperson there. But I realized, like, I wasn't fulfilled anymore. Like, sales wasn't enough for me. You know, even being at great companies, tech startups, fintech, like, it just wasn't enough. And so I leave my job, and my boss gave me a book called The Alchemist. And for those who haven't read The Alchemist, it's a book about this boy, a shepherd boy, who goes on a journey to find his treasure in life. And early on in his journey, he meets this wise man who tells him about omens, or signs from the universe, that will guide him on this journey to find his treasure. And so I read this book after a long, drawn-out set of circumstances that led this book back to me, even though I got rid of the first copy that was given to me. And I read this book and I realize, like, man, the possibilities for me to find my dream and my treasure, they're just waiting for me to see them. And so it was with this mindset that I get a phone call from my uncle, who's an engineer at NASA. He was working on the space launch system at the time, and he was telling me about a project he was working on where he was going to use this gecko-based adhesive that was invented by NASA in the 80s, and he was going to use it to line these wiring behind this paneling. And so I had recently mounted my TV on the wall, and I was had a disastrous time trying to get it mounted. And I'm like, man, if I could just have this magical gecko adhesive, then it would have saved me a lot of time and energy trying to mount this TV to the wall. And I just could not get this thought out of my head. So I start doing research. I see MIT has done research on this adhesive, and Stanford has done research on the adhesive. And eventually I create a prototype of this little product that would allow your phone to be a kickstand and would allow you to mount your phone to the wall just like a TV. And I created a prototype out of double-sided tape and cardstock. Made videos, found a couple manufacturers in China. I reached out to them, sent them the videos, and I was off to getting them to make prototypes for me. And at the time, before I started this project, I was like doing just like marketing for small businesses. I was like, oh, maybe I'll just do marketing for folks. And I realized I didn't really enjoy that. And so this was really like one of those things where I'm like, man, you know, I may not like marketing for other people, but what if I was marketing for myself, for my own idea, my own concept? And it was really kind of just like a challenge that I'd given myself. I didn't know it was going to turn into a real business. But as the months would go on, I would look up, okay, you know, if I'm going to create this product, well, I probably need a trademark. So I went and filed trademarks, looked it up on YouTube. I was like, okay, well, you know, I probably should file a patent for this thing. That seems like something that's really difficult. Let me look that up. So I look it up on YouTube, file a provisional patent. I'm like, okay, I'm going to need a video. I'm going to launch this thing on Kickstarter. So I go, I buy a drone, buy some nice cameras, make a video, edit it all down, and I publish it to Kickstarter. And I remember our video for Kickstarter was about 2.5 minutes. And 2.5 minutes after we launched the campaign, I got my first sale from some random guy in like Oregon. Doesn't know me, doesn't know the product. And he's buying an idea that I had just off of a video that I created. And I was shocked. And over the course of the next few weeks, we sold $15,000 worth of these little products called Flipsticks. And if I'm being honest, I thought I was going to sell $1 million, but you know, I'll settle for 15 grand.
Yeah.
And it was enough to show me like, man, there's something here. There's opportunity here. And if I just keep going, who knows where it will take me. And, you know, I wish I could say it all was gravy from there, but you know, it wasn't. I tried to get Facebook ads going and Instagram ads. That wasn't working for me. So I end up selling these things at just random festivals around town. Things like the barbecue festival and the international food festival. And, you know, all these just little events. And, I the first day I go out, I make $100, then $200, then $300, $400. And I was like, okay, well, how could I do this every day? You know, I don't know about, you know, internet-based marketing, but I do know how to sell something to someone in person. Where's a place I can do that? And I say, oh, you know, I should just go to the place where the most innovative place to sell things, the mall. Now, no one would have told me, no one could have told me in 2018 that the mall was a good place to sell things, right? Malls are dying. Nobody's going there. But turns out enough people were going there for us to do $30,000 in sales in just 60 days.
Wow.
And with just a little mall kiosk. And then I'm like, okay, I was able to do that. Well, now what can I do? And I thought about being a kid and watching Shark Tank. And I'm like, man, I'm going to go on the Shark Tank. That's what I'm going to do. Like, I'm going to get Mark Cuban to invest in my business. I'm going to get Lori to invest in my business. And I'm going to take this thing to the moon. So now I'm like 6 months into my business. I apply to be on Shark Tank. I fly to Las Vegas to audition at CES, the Consumer Electronics Show. I end up winning the Techstars pitch competition at CES. I get to meet all these great folks. And then I go on, pitch to Shark Tank. 40,000 people apply to Shark Tank every year. And I get past the first round down to like the final 1,000. I have to make a video for the producers. I get past that round down to the final 250. They call me up, they're like, Akeem, you're so great. You know, we're getting down to the wire. We only have to get it down to 120 people. We got an interview set for you with the executive producer. You know, you're getting so close. No matter what, we'll be in touch with you, but you're really close. And so I finally get a call. And they tell me you're not going to be on Shark Tank. And I was devastated because here I am. I don't know anything about social media. My website's not making sales. All my eggs were in one basket, and that basket was Shark Tank. And now that opportunity had fallen through the cracks. And I got to be honest, for about 30 days, I was ready to give up. I was like, this thing is just a waste of time. I should have never read that book, The Alchemist. Like, none of this stuff is working out for me. But I remember back to being that kid in college in that dorm room. Nothing's working out for me. And I was able to recover from that. And I'm like, I can recover from this. So I had this bright idea. I said, okay, if I can't get the celebrities from Shark Tank to invest, I just got to go find other celebrities. Okay. And I found out that this rapper, billionaire rapper, was going to have an event in Atlanta. And it was going to be a music and comedy summit. They were going to give away a record deal to somebody. And more importantly, for me, they were going to have a business pitch competition. And so I go to this event and I pitch the business. Excuse me, I go to this event. I want to pitch the business in the pitch competition, but the pitch competition is closed. And so I'm like, okay, well, I gotta do something else. And the only other option was the music competition. So I said, you know what? I'm gonna sign up for the music competition and I'm gonna write a rap and I will rap my pitch to this rapper and convince him, I will convince him to invest in my consumer product brand, even though they're trying to give away a record deal. That was my plan when I went to this event. Terrible plan. You'd probably get an F on it if you wrote it down in Business 101. But you know what? It was my plan and I believed in it. So I go. I do my rap. I get to the top five. I'm going to be able to get on stage with DJ Khaled, Sean Diddy Combs, Timbaland, all these rappers who are going to be the judge of this competition. I'm in the top five. And then they disqualify me from the event. They say, "Akeem, you're not a real rapper. Like, you don't want a record deal. You're trying to pitch your business. Like, we can't put you in the top five." I was like, "But I have the top score from the judges. Like, I earned this spot." But they did. They disagreed and they disqualified me. And here I was sitting at this event after I've invested $1,000 of my money, getting down to Atlanta to go to this event. I'm like, "Man, how could this be so unfair? Like, how could the universe, how could God be so cruel as to put me in this position to just take away opportunity after opportunity? It just didn't seem fair." And so I'm sitting, waiting for the final music competition to come on. And there was a comedy show right before this final music competition. So I'm sitting in the front row and I'm listening to the comedian, tell his jokes. I'm not laughing, I'm upset. But something inside of me said, just stand up. So I stand up. And then I was like, let me hold my products in the air. So I hold my products up. And then the comedian looks at me. He's like, "Bro, what are you trying to sell me, man?" And I go full pitch mode. I'm telling, this is the flip stick. It lets you stick your phone to any surface. You can make TikTok videos with it completely hands-free. And you can watch it. And you can watch YouTube videos. And you can do this. And you can do that. And eventually the comedian gets his whole show derailed. Everyone's running up to the stage. And he lets me on the stage to perform my rap. And the whole crowd is laughing, they're eating it up. And the same person that disqualified me from the competition runs over, says, "You got to come backstage. You got to meet all the executives. AT&T is the sponsor of the event. They want to meet you." I get to meet all these celebrities. And eventually, the Revolt Summit, which is the organization putting on this event, they would invite me to LA. They bought tons of flipsticks from me. In LA, I end up meeting Snoop Dogg. Snoop Dogg ends up loving the flipstick. And between Snoop and Revolt and all these people that have seen this kid who's like trying to convince people via a rap to invest in his business at a music conference, they're eating this stuff up behind the scenes. But to my face, they're telling me, "You got to stop doing this." When Snoop Dogg happened, the security tried to haul me out because I was trying to get his attention while he's on stage. All this stuff, I'm always the troublemaker, right? But behind the scenes, I was talking to this other celebrity who he works for TMZ. And I was walking up to him in LA and I'm like, "Hey man, I have this product called the Flipstick." He's like, "Oh yeah, I know about you." I'm like, "What do you mean you know about me?" He's like, "Man, they've been talking about you in all the meetings." I said, the meetings? He's like, yeah, everybody's talking about you in the meetings. They're saying, yeah, he does this and he interrupted this. He's like, let me tell you. He's like, I don't know what they told you, but they love you. I was like, are you serious? He's like, oh man, they love you. Just keep doing what you're doing. And as it would turn out, one of the judges at the business pitch competition that I never pitched for, he was a casting director for Shark Tank. And so this organization called him up and said, listen, if you ever want to do business with us again, you got to have this kid on Shark Tank. And he would call me and invite me to come audition. And that's how I was able to get on the show. And as I remember being in, like, it was COVID. You ever be on Shark Tank? And I remember, like, being locked down in this hotel room like a prisoner for like 20 days, like 10, 15 days as I was waiting for the quarantine. And I just remember thinking, I'm like, holy crap. Like, I'm in this hotel room, room service every day, getting ready to go on national television. And I went on this crazy journey over the past year from the rejection to this moment now. And it was just one of those things where, once again, I kind of showed myself, like, wow, when you don't give up on your dreams, like, you can make magic happen. And the things that happen to you sometimes are even better than what you initially had hoped for. Because for those who may go out and look up my Shark Tank episode, when you watch it, you'll see me come out in a breakaway space jumpsuit and I start rapping to the sharks. And the reason that that happened is because they were like, hey, if DJ Khaled and Snoop Dogg, if they get a rap, well, we want to rap for Shark Tank. It was just one of those things where they, yes, liked the product Flipstick, but more importantly than the product, they liked the journey. They liked the story and what it means for somebody to do something and not give up on their dreams just because somebody told them no. And man, I'm so grateful that I learned those lessons early in life so that when I had these bigger opportunities in the future, I didn't give up too soon. And I think that a lot of us, we give up too soon, and we're really trained to give up too soon. But when you don't, man, I'll tell you, you can have extraordinary things happen.
Yeah, and I mean, this is one of the best, you know, never give up stories I've ever heard. You know, there's so many times where you could have, you just didn't, you kept going, and it just kept getting better and better and better. And on Shark Tank, right, when I watched it, I remember actually watching it, not when it first aired, but maybe a year ago when I was on a big Shark Tank kick. I was watching like every episode. But then I went back and watched it when you emailed me. You got a deal with Lori, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I get this deal from Lori. And this is another story. Look, I got stories for days, Andrew. So I get this deal from Lori, right? And Lori was the exact person I wanted to do a deal with. Like, before I went on the show, I read her book. Like, I was listening the way she talked so I could use the same language that she used so I would feel familiar to her. Like, I was so certain. I'm like, she's the one. Like, I need Lori. So I go on the show. I get a deal with Lori. I make Mr. Wonderful upset with me for not taking his deal. And you know, as the days and weeks went on after the show, you know, we're trying to negotiate with Lori and her team. You know, they want one thing. I'm like, that's not what I want. And it started to dawn on me, like, we're not going to come to a deal, and this may go to air. And so I get a notice from Shark Tank that, hey, you're going to be on air in 2 weeks. There's no deal from Lori. I send them an email. They're like, well, we're still looking at the due diligence. Let's just see what happens on the show. And I'm freaking out because I need to rebuild my website. I need a warehouse. I need to order inventory. I need all this stuff. And I don't have the money to do it. And I was so definitely afraid of being one of those stories of someone who goes on Shark Tank, has a viral moment, and then misses it, doesn't capture the sales, and waste the opportunity. And this was one of those times, another one, you just never know why you do things and why you sign up for things and why things happen in the order that they do. But prior to, you know, right before I went to go film Shark Tank, I had applied for a grant called Arch Grants. It's a $50,000 non-dilutive grant for startups, primarily tech startups, right? SaaS companies. But I applied anyway. I end up winning this, and I find out that I'm going to win this like a week before I find out when my air date for Shark Tank is. But here's the catch on the 50 grand. I wasn't supposed to get even the first bit of the money for like 4 months, and it was going to come over the course of a year, right? $10,000 every few months. And I'm like, I need $30,000 yesterday. I maxed out all my credit cards, buying all this equipment for the warehouse, paying the deposit for the space. I couldn't order any inventory yet. I couldn't order most of the stuff that I needed. And I called up this Grant and I said, hey, I was like, guys, I know I didn't tell you this, but I'm gonna be on Shark Tank. And I got like 10 days. I need $30,000 yesterday so that I can actually take advantage of this opportunity and be there and make it happen. And literally within 3 days, I had $30,000 in my bank account to help me launch the business on Shark Tank. And it was like, it was literally like a miracle, because it's like, here I was expecting 100 grand from Lori. That hasn't come in yet. And I need money and I need it now. And because of another opportunity that I took a swing at, now I have $30,000 overnight, you know, in order to make sure that I could take advantage of the opportunity. And it's just like, I think when you hear about people's path to success, a lot of times we only hear about the good and we hear about this ladder that they climbed and it was just up, 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 up. But that's just not how it goes, right? It's a roller coaster. It's ups and it's downs and it's really hard times followed by really amazing times followed then again by really hard times. Like, that's just how life goes. And if you listen to anyone's story, the true version of their story, they'll tell you as much. But unfortunately, we live in a social media society where we only want to see the glossy, coated, candy-coated, you know, positive story of success. And that's just generally not how it goes. And so even though we didn't close our deal with Lori after the fact, and at the time I thought, I was like, man, I'm never going to get on QVC, the home shopping network. I'm never going to get into retail stores. Slowly but surely, through network connections that I made, I ended up getting other investors, we ended up getting in those retailers, I ended up doing the home shopping network and QVC. I did all the things that I wanted to be able to do, even though at the time it seemed like, man, I'm not going to be able to close this deal with Lori. And I was devastated. And what would end up happening is a year after Shark Tank first aired, I ended up raising $1.2 million. So over 10 times what I asked for on Shark Tank, and I did it at a fraction of the valuation, because on Shark Tank, I had a valuation, what was it? I was going to give her 100 grand for 25%. So I had a valuation of $400,000 on Shark Tank, right? A year later, I raised money at a valuation of $5 million. And it was just one of those things where it was like, man, you know, at the time, it felt like this huge failure and I'm missing out on this opportunity, but it really was a setup for a blessing to happen in my life. And one of the best investors that I had when I did that round was a woman named Maxine Clark. And she's the founder of Build-A-Bear. She knew Lori very well. And she was from St. Louis, the same town that I'm from. And when she saw my product and she just told me her story of building Build-A-Bear into this multinational brand, and she's like, I was the only woman in the toy industry. It was just me and even the CEO of Barbie at the time was a man, and they hated my guts. And she's like, but I didn't care anyway. And I told him I was going to do this. And she was just like, you know, I love what you're doing. I believe in your idea and I love your story. And so I'm going to give you this money. And when I tell you, like, she made so many phone calls for me to every retailer. She knows she's on the board of like so many companies and organizations and stuff like that. And it was incredible the people that I met, because I didn't get that deal and close that deal with Lori after the fact. So I just, for all your listeners, Andrew and Steven, like, as you guys go on this journey, the bigger your dreams are, the more adversity, the more failures, and the more opposition that you're going to face. But I encourage you, one, I encourage you to read The Alchemist, but two, I encourage you to just know, like, that those obstacles, they're just the contrast in your story that you need to know you're on the right path, you're on the right journey, and to just keep going, because, man, there's incredible things on the other side.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've learned so much from your story today, you know, with all that you've done. And it's really, really impressive. And I love Especially that last story you told is my favorite, that, you know, you were really hoping for this deal from Lori. You got it. You know, you did your homework. You studied. And then, right, you know, it might not, you know, you realized it might not go through, but you still, you came out of it, you figured it out, and you got other money, you know, to fill it, you know. It was incredible to hear that. But, yeah. Steven, I know you had a few questions, right?
Oh, yeah, I got... So here's the biggest one. What I don't know if you know exactly, but what makes your product stand out in like the sticky phone accessories? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, in the marketplace.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we use a gecko-based adhesive called synthetic CT, right? And it originally was developed at NASA in their study of biomimicry, or the study of how we can mimic animals in engineering to solve engineering problems. And so because we use this reusable adhesive, it makes it washable, cleanable. You can use it again and again. And no one else in the marketplace creates a product that is detachable from your phone. So it's not like a case, right? It's something that you can put on any phone at any time, take it off at any time, but while still giving you the ability to use your phone hands-free. And so most of our customers that use our product, they're either going to use it to create like social media videos, so they'll make TikToks and Instagram reels, or they'll use it for FaceTime calls or Zoom calls. Anytime they need to be able to use their phone, and particularly their camera hands-free, it's great. And then also we see a lot of customers that use our product because they want to watch YouTube and Netflix hands-free. They use it on planes to stick it to the back of seats, or they put it on the back of their kids' iPads so that their kids can stick it to the back of the seats in the car. So it's really just about how do you consume and create content hands-free using your phone. And all of our products that we make are all in the effort to solve that problem with a focus first and foremost on the casual content creator.
That's cool. I also got one more. So this is a big question that we normally ask all our interviewees. Do you have anything that you could share with us, like any future products or, you know, just anything coming up?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if I have a future product that I can share today, but here's what I will tell you. This is what I'm excited for in the future. To me, I think that what is happening in virtual reality, especially now that Apple's gotten to the game with the Vision Pro, is going to change. It's going to change the game. I definitely see, you know, us moving away from phones in maybe 10 to 15 years to wearables that, are going to interact with our eyes, or maybe even a neural interface, who knows, that are going to just change the way that we communicate with each other. And I'm very excited for it, because I do see spatial computing and the metaverse as the future of how we interact with computers. In combination with that, you know, as everyone in, you know, the world is realizing, like, AI will fundamentally change the way that we work. And for me, even though, you know, I've been in a consumer product business space, I do motivational speaking, like, I'm always thinking about how AI will influence everyone's work, and every industry will be influenced by AI. And so, you know, when I think about future products and future things that I want to do, like when I created Flipstick, I just kind of did it because I had an idea, I heard about something, and I kind of went forward with it. But as I think about things today, I'm like, okay, you know, where will we be in the future? And what will the products, what kind of products and services will need to come into fruition for people to take advantage of the direction that things are already headed in? And so, like, for us with Flipstick, I really got lucky, because as we created Flipstick, less than a year after we've created Flipstick, TikTok became the number one app in the App Store. So all of a sudden, there was this huge shift from the traditional social media of taking selfies, posting long form videos on YouTube, and now everything was shifting towards short form video content. And we were an accessory that enabled short form video content. And that wasn't planned. I just got lucky, you know? But now looking at it, I'm like, okay, when I think about what will be the transformational technologies of the next 10 years, how can I do the same thing, whether it's a product or a service, and how do I position myself or position, you know, a project or company that I'm leading or a company that I'm helping, you know, consulting work on, how do I help them position themselves for the future that's coming? And so, yeah, I know that doesn't answer your question exactly, Stephen, but that's my answer.
No, I think that's a good insight. I love what you're talking about, the AI. I thought of something funny, like you could add an accessory and then like it's just a stick on to your forehead and then the phone is in your face now.
Wow.
You know what? Listen, I may have to come after the Vision Pro market share, you know, just stick the phone right in front of you. It's way yeah. cheaper than $4,000.
Yeah. Well, this has been a ton of fun. We've learned a lot. Before we end it off for today, is there anything you want to add that we didn't get to or anything you want to say?
Well, I will say, if anybody wants to follow my fun adventures of traveling around the country and talking to, you know, kids and adults and people of all walks of life, you know, about just pursuing their dreams and entrepreneurship, they can follow me on all social media channels at Akeem Shannon. That's A-K-E-E-M Shannon. Or visit my website, AkeemShannon.com. If people are interested in purchasing a flipstick so you can get your hands-free TikToking on, they can visit our pages at Get Flipstick. That's Get, F-L-I-P-S-T-I-K. Also at GetFlipstick.com and Flipstick on Amazon and any other retailer. And lastly, I also have a text message group chat for anyone that, you know, sometimes you just need a little bit of dose of motivation. You're down. You're feeling like, oh, you know, do I really want to do this homework? Like, do I really want to fill out this application? Do I really want to be in this summer program? Like, you know, if you just need a little bit of motivation, I send out, you know, weekly messages to people of some of the things that I find inspirational. And that's a totally free group text chat. So people can text me directly to get into that chat at 314-789-9005. And they'll be signed up to get those motivational text messages.
All right. Well, thank you all for tuning in. Thank you, Akeem, for joining us. And yeah, if there's ever a big product launch, if there's another product, maybe we'll have you back on in the future. But to all the viewers, see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.